This is another damn podcast about digital asset management. My name is Henrik de Gior. Today I'm speaking with Jake Nadell. Jake, how are you?
Real well, Henrik. Thank you.
Jake, how are you involved with digital asset management?
I am the preservation officer for the UCLA library, and I've been involved with the whole digital library effort in some way or another for about a decade now. Preservation officer, I might explain as being something that has two parts in terms of digital asset management. And one of those is kind of trying to get assets that are worth managing in the first place. And the other is making sure that all those assets will maintain value, that they'll still be usable from one asset management system to another. That is, we kind of have to have a planning horizon that stretches into decades and longer. And so we expect that at a certain point, those assets move from system to system. So both of those are sort of shepherding roles for our digital assets, our digital material. And I think the thing that unites those is that we look to have certain technical criteria, certain specifications and standards that we produce content to. And of course, I work with a great team all across UCLA Library and the UCLA system, who are really a set of people with very specific technical competencies for each kind of step of the chain.
Excellent. And how do you deal with the challenges of cultural heritage and DAM?
Yeah, I think they're kind of two parts here. And one, and probably most interesting to our audience here, is the actual kind of internal workflow. And the other part is really about what cultural heritage assets are and the kind of particular mission and obligation that come with that. In our workflow, we've been talking a lot about having a three-part strategy, or it might be better to say a three-part test for preservation activities at UCLA Library. Mm-hmm. And one is that we always try to have a method for doing analysis or doing some information gathering about whatever our problem is, and that leads to a proposed treatment or course of action. So we try not to act until we have some evidence. And all of that we try to have happen in-house and have that be the bulk of the work. You know, just as a matter of kind of good management, we want to, when we've done our part, have it be more or less ready to go. Then kind of knowing that we will be either incomplete, we may have subject expertise that we lack, which is usually the case. Mm-hmm. If we're dealing with, say, an old Armenian scroll and we're creating a digital version of that, mm-hmm. We really need to talk to language and subject experts to figure out how that will be most useful to its users. Sometimes that's an area of technical concern. So very often, you know, as we're dealing with right now, a big topic for us is research data. Our scientists especially produce enormous research data sets. And in the arts and humanities, it's very common now to use multiple sources of data. So there may be news video feeds, there may be GIS information, and those may come together in a research project. And very often within the library itself, we have to manage that asset as a group of assets, but we need to look outside to a particular technical expert to help guide us on the best way to do that. So that second stage is sort of kind of outside review and approval. Mm-hmm. And then we always try to have a hedge, some strategy in case things go wrong. Sometimes that's as simple as just retaining a previous version. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's retaining an alternate format. Video is an area right now where we know what formats are good for use right now, mm-hmm. but we're very much uncertain about what formats will be good for use and repurposing even 5 years from now. Mm-hmm. And sometimes an alternate format is simply the authentic artifact. We may scan a photo and we may do a lot of work with that scanned digital version, but of course we're going to keep the original photo. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's identifying a third-party provider that we can fall back on, especially as we work with publishers. We're often licensing content to make available to our users. And so we do certain things to care for that content, but then we will also arrange with that publisher and a third party. A group like Portico is an example, and the Locks Project, or the Clocks Project, that stands for Lots of Copies, Keep Stuff Safe. That's a group that operates out of Stanford. They both work with libraries and publishers to be a third-party archiving service. So there's always a third group that can provide access. So we always try to have some sort of hedge, knowing that we're kind of planning for the future. And of course, that planning for the future part is in some ways the thing we do least day to day. We have a job just like everybody else, but it's part of what makes the job so fantastic is that we're building this collection of record or last resort. And of course, the materials we get to work with are, some incredible artifacts, these wonderful digital versions of them, and now increasingly the kind of born digital research projects of kind of some of the best and brightest. UCLA has, of course, got a pretty interesting community of people creating digital assets here.
Excellent. And what advice would you have to give to DAM professionals or people aspiring to become a DAM professional?
Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar with Tom Peterson, sort of a management guru, management consultant. And he has this great catchphrase, outread the other guy. I find myself saying that a lot lately. I think, you know, when my own engagement with the DAM community comes from recognizing that the conversations I was having with digital library folks and with preservation colleagues were very similar to conversations I was encountering in this other community, this digital asset management community. And I think that's a two-way street. And so I would encourage anyone in DAM, and especially people who have an interest in the cultural heritage side of it, to kind of look at your related professions, look at both, you know, the customers you serve, as well as people who maybe share some of the same technical base and technical infrastructure. You know, your photographers, your records managers. We're all trying to do some of the same things, whether we call it library science, inventory management, manufacturing. And I think the people I find who are really at the head of the game and are the most interesting to work with are the people who can see what can be interpreted or adapted to fit their needs.
Excellent.
In cultural heritage specifically, of course, there's some more practical things too, or more immediate things. A number of library and information science programs now are offering specializations in digital libraries and digital information. My alma mater, Indiana University, does a lot of work in this area. There's a program called DigIn, D-I-G-I-N, at Arizona. I know Chapel Hill in Michigan, and more and more. And of course, they're all just trying to keep up with UCLA. but all those programs are worth comparing and considering. And then very specifically in cultural heritage, it's worth knowing that there's a bias towards open and or free software solutions. If you know that LAMP stack, the Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP, you're in really good shape in terms of tech skills. And of course, none of us are out from under the shadow of Adobe. I think that, you know, certainly in my sector, a lot of the tools we use day to day look a lot like the tools that are in use elsewhere.
Of course. Yeah.
Learn XML.
Yes, always important.
If you've got XML, the rest comes pretty easily, I think. So.
Mm-hmm. True. Well, thanks, Jake.
I was saying my pleasure. I'm really glad I could do this.
For more on digital asset management, log on to anotherdamblog.com. Thanks again.